Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, November 29th, 2010. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford and voice-activated Sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. And by Slingbox. Watch your favorite TV shows when you're away from home with Slingbox. Check out Slingbox at a Best Buy near you or visit slingbox.com/twit. And by the AARP Auto Insurance Program from The Hartford. Discover great rates, benefits, and service specifically designed for AARP members at aarp.thehartford.com/podcast. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day along with you, try to make sense of it all. Microsoft heading to court.
Why?
On your behalf.
Really?
Well, not really, on their own behalf. But they want to defend patents from patent trolls.
Mm.
Actually, they want to stop patents from being granted. Actually, it's a lot more complicated than anything I've said so far.
It's a lot of everything.
Yeah. So I4i, which is spelled I, the number 4, and then the letter I.
Canadian company.
They successfully got Microsoft to stop selling Word with an XML editing function.
Right.
They said that it was...
their patent.
Yeah, that they'd have violated their patent. Microsoft is challenging them all the way to the Supreme Court on a defense that... the company should only have to show by a preponderance of the evidence that the patent is invalid, which they say it is, that it's too obvious or something like
that.
Right. Rather than have to show a clear and convincing reason why the patent is invalid.
So it's like saying, you know, this is 90% for sure a valid patent and more like... or an invalid patent, rather, and more like, this is like 51% invalid.
Yeah,
preponderance... if it just seems pretty invalid.
Preponderance of evidence says it's more likely than not that this patent is invalid. Now, that this all sounds really weird when you're outside of a courtroom, but this all is very meaningful in case law. Preponderance of the evidence, there's plenty of examples of. It's basically telling the jury, like, if you think... that it's slightly more likely that this patent is valid. You've got conflicting evidence.
Mm-hmm.
You go with the one that has, you know, the preponderance. If under clear and convincing, which has been the standard up until now, it's basically like you have to assume the patent is invalid unless they clearly convinced you that it wasn't.
I mean, who are the people granting the patents? And have they been clearly convinced that they are good patents to begin with? Because isn't that where this problem really lies?
The patent office examiners spend less than 20 hours on average reviewing a patent before it is granted. And that's one of the reasons Microsoft says that there should be less of a burden, less of a standard, because it's not clear that this patent was granted without a mistake in the first place because of the limited amount of time they have to look at each patent.
And how imagine how many hours they're spending now discussing this in a court
Law. Right?
A lot more than 20 hours. A lot more money, too.
Microsoft's got a bunch of folks on its side, obviously a lot of retailers. CTIA, the telephone industry, is on their side with broad support from wireless companies. And, of course, I4I, now that the Supreme Court has agreed to hear the case, we'll probably get some folks on their side. And they'll all file what are called amicus curiae briefs, which mean friend of the court. So they just get to, people get to say, like, I agree with Microsoft or I agree with I4i. Thing is, this isn't just about Microsoft being able to put their XML editing back into Microsoft Word. This is about changing the way patent law is defended. If it's only a preponderance of the evidence, then fewer patent troll cases will be won by the patent holders because more patents will be found invalid. The damages award in the settlements agreed to out of court will go down because there's less likelihood of winning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible that we'd have patents declared invalid by the patent office because they know, well, this isn't going to meet the standard. So
how do did it get to be to the point where so many patents are being granted to companies that, you know, someone like Apple calls a patent troll, and someone is not taking that much time reviewing the patent in the beginning? You know, I mean, why are we in this situation to begin with?
Well, because we haven't updated. There's 100 million theories on how we got to this place. My favorite, personally, is that we haven't updated patent law in much too long. And trying to take the patent law that was designed to protect chairs and apply it to software just doesn't work.
Well, Microsoft may be on the way to changing things for everybody, it
sounds
like.
They also want to change the way you watch television. Apparently, they have been talking with many media companies to create an entirely new TV service delivered through the Xbox 360.
Well, now, hold on a second.
Okay, fine, I'm holding on.
There are a lot of...
What now, Lane?
There are a lot of 360 owners already.
Right here? Yeah.
So it's like, you know, Google saying, Google Buzz for all the Gmail people. You're already using it, right? Yeah. However, they have a lot of competition already. I mean, Microsoft is rolling out alternative
Roku,
TV service.
Roku, Apple TV, Google TV, all these folks are in the game.
Yeah. But if you already have a 360, they've got a leg up there.
The advantage is right now the Xbox 360 is often recommended as the best way to get video on your TV because not only is it already there for people who wanted the game console in the first place, but they have Netflix on there.
Right.
They have ESPN3 on there.
Mm-hmm.
They have a video marketplace where you can buy and rent movies and TV shows from the Zune marketplace on the Xbox. There's Media Extender for the Xbox 360, so you can take things that are on your computer on your home network and watch them over your Xbox 360. So essentially what they're saying is we want to work with the networks to figure out how to extend their video onto the Xbox 360 platform, and they want to do it in a way that still allows them to get paid twice. That's why they don't want to leave cable. They get paid once for the advertisements on their network, and they get paid a second time, in most cases, by the cable company that carries them.
So why wouldn't they just want to expand Windows Media Center to be this new network?
Well, because
Windows Microsoft doesn't work that way?
Yeah, Windows Media Center interface doesn't extend to the Xbox, and it might not be the best way to do it. I think what Microsoft is looking at is we want to put an app in the Xbox Live and say, hey, you pay us a certain amount a month, and you'll get all of the streaming video content from these providers. Or maybe it's a la carte. A lot of people are thinking it might be a la carte, where it's like, oh, you pay for the Showtime app. You pay for the HBO app. Other folks say they're talking to the cable companies themselves about just being part of the TV Anywhere initiative, so that if you're a Comcast subscriber, then your Xbox would be able to get the Comcast service and would be like adding a second set-top box to your household without actually having to go and rent a second box from the cable company.
Well, this all sounds great, Tom. When can I expect this?
Oh, sometime next year.
Oh, well, wait a second.
They're talking
so this
about
isn't
at least
like
a year.
In time for the holidays or anything.
Oh,
this
no.
is
oh,
well
maybe,
after.
Maybe the holidays. Next holidays.
Next holidays.
The 2012 holidays.
So yeah. That's really the issue because everyone's scrambling to get their set-top boxes in all of our homes.
Well, and that's the problem with Microsoft, isn't it? They're always like second with the great idea.
Yeah.
The
Even
Zoom,
if it's great.
The Windows Phone. These are all great ideas that are always
it just
a
wasn't,
bit behind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm. All right. Lots of WikiLeaks fallout going on right now. Just a mountain of stories out there, not just about the leaks themselves. WikiLeaks published over 200,000 documents yesterday evening, Sunday evening. And we're not going to go into all of the things about Gaddafi having Botox or them collecting DNA from various diplomats. There's all kinds of crazy stuff. You can find those all over the internet if you mm-hmm. want to dig into what's there. The main things are we have the government condemning this, saying you're putting people's lives at risk by divulging this confidential information.
Mm-hmm.
You have newspapers carefully reporting some of the leaks.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, they've been given exclusive access to the leaks before the public on WikiLeaks.org. And then you have other folks looking through this saying, there's nothing in here. This is embarrassing, sure, but there's really nothing devastating.
It's not something that the public is going to read and be frightened of or outraged about
yeah.
necessarily. Here's the thing. So These are, you know, however many thousands of cables that were published.
Yeah, they call them cables. I imagine they're emails these days.
Diplomatic correspondence, which I guess
still send them by cable.
Yeah, it was. You know, somebody had asked on a morning news program I was listening to, well, what is a cable? It's like, well, historically it means a hard copy of something, but obviously in this day and age it wouldn't always be that. So why aren't, you know, if this stuff is so sensitive and the U.S. government is so upset about it and obviously embarrassed, but saying, hey, you know, this is, you know, WikiLeaks. Some people are saying WikiLeaks might be a terrorist organization.
Right. Congressman Peter King of New York says that he thinks that WikiLeaks qualifies under the Patriot Act to be classified the same as Al-Qaeda or Aum Shinrikyo, the Japanese cult that released sarin gas, that they should be called a terrorist organization. A little less stridently, the White House is exploring the possibility of taking legal action against WikiLeaks. But other people are saying, well, we shouldn't be going after them. We should stop the leaks.
Right. I mean, the leaks, this is the result of thousands of people, you know, federal workers on some level, having access to a large amount of documents. I mean, we know how tech news leaks. You know, you have enough people who have access to something and it gets out. You know, why isn't this stuff in the hands of far fewer people and all encrypted, let's say?
Well, it's easier to say than do.
Of course.
Obviously. Leaks happen because people are involved. And you can know, I mean, say for the same reason we get viruses, even though we have antivirus and firewalls, and even if you do everything right, somebody clicks on the wrong link or installs the wrong program and, you know, the weak part is humanity for sure.
But that's why embargoes are such a bad idea too.
That doesn't mean that there, you mean tech news story embargoes?
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Doesn't mean that there couldn't be improvements. And I think this is going to shine a light on that. And there probably will be a ton of improvements. There's also the idea of just punishing WikiLeaks directly. There was a DDoS against WikiLeaks yesterday. But it turns out that the DDoS was not very strong.
Also,
they rebounded
from
it pretty quickly.
WikiLeaks said, hey, we're being attacked right now, but everyone that, you know, the publications that we've already shared the documents with are going to go ahead and publish them. So take us down. I mean, they weren't too worried about that. They had obviously put out the information already.
More leaks are coming, including more government cables. And Julian Assange told Forbes that the private sector will be the target of the next major leak. He says that his whistleblower site will release tens of thousands of documents from a major U.S. financial firm, and there'll be a bank scandal. So it's certainly they're not dissuaded by anything that's happened here.
You know what I think scares the public at large more than, you know, what government official may have said about another government official? Their money.
The amount of money that WikiLeaks
has? Just the idea of bank statement, what? Bank organizations, who? Is it my bank? That scares me.
Well, and that's not the idea here. They're not going to show people's bank statements.
Sure.
Unless it's the CEO's bank statement showing he embezzled something.
Right.
WikiLeaks avowedly only goes after the powerful, though you have to take their word for that. Chinese Politburo is apparently responsible for the Google hacking, according to this, according to the WikiLeaks. That's what the New York Times says they picked up out of the hundreds of thousands of documents. A Chinese informant working for the U.S. Embassy said it was part of a coordinated campaign of computer sabotage. Everybody thought so, but China denied it. This is one informant, obviously. So, you know, it's whatever you think of WikiLeaks, whatever you think needs to be done about this. The internet has changed the playing field. In the early 1970s, and you hear this compared all the time, the Pentagon Papers were leaked. And they were linked by a government official on purpose because they thought there was something damaging going on in the White House that the public needed to know. And the New York Times was sued to try to prevent them from publishing the Pentagon Papers. And the New York Times stood up and said, no, the public needs to know this. They were published. And a debate was had about the Vietnam War based on those papers. Huge deal at the time. Same rhetoric. Some people said it was endangering lives to publish the Pentagon Papers. Others said it was necessary for the nation to make an informed decision about where they stood on the war. These days, it's not one stack of papers. It's weekly releases.
Right.
It's banks. It's governments. It's worldwide embassies. It's much farther reaching. And we don't have time to solve this today, but there's going to have to be a long and involved and sensible conversation about what the proper role of a whistleblower is, what the proper role of a journalist is, and what the proper role of confidential information is. Because there are roles for all three. You can't just pick one. You have to have all three to have a productive society.
And even the proper role of a whistleblower is, it's all relative, because what if the whistleblower doesn't understand what they're whistleblowing?
Yes, exactly.
So,
by the way, Australia, maybe bad timing for them. The Australian Communications and Media Authority just removed WikiLeaks from the Australian blacklist. You know, they have a blacklist for sites in Australia. Said since April 2010, the Australian Communications and Media Authority has investigated two complaints about specific pages of content on the WikiLeaks website, which both resolved to content found not to be prohibited. So just in time for all the cables.
Yeah.
All right, let's thank our sponsor, Ford, makers of Ford and voice-activated sync. They help bring tech news today to you. Problem a lot of us have while we're driving, we do a lot of things. We make phone calls on our mobile phones, play music, flip through playlists, spend time looking for what we want to listen to before we play. That's all a temptation to take your eyes off the road, and that can make you uneasy. So Ford, a voice-activated sync, brings you true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. We had it on the rental car. My sister was up for Thanksgiving. They rented a car with Ford voice-activated sync, so you could plug in that iPhone. You didn't even have to plug it in. Bluetooth.
Yeah.
And just say, you know, do this, do that. Find me my playlist. Get turn-by-turn directions, real-time traffic alerts, and weather. If you're ever in an accident and your airbag deploys, sync automatically calls 911. Music and podcast search, personalized traffic alerts, they'll route you around the bad spots. They know where the traffic is, and they say, hey, you know what? Here's turn-by-turn directions. Take an exit here and take the frontage road. It's going to be faster. Sync helps you keep your eye on the road and on the wheel. And there's a new program from Ford called the 2012 Ford Focus Global Test Drive. Your chance to get a sneak peek at all the new, at the all-new Focus coming out early 2011. The Ford Focus is a three-model lineup, a five-door hatchback, a four-door sedan, and a five-door wagon. 2012 Ford Focus includes the latest parking technologies like that Active Park Assist. You remember Leo using that. Rear-view camera, torque vectoring control, which hugs the curves, new fuel-efficient engines, voice-activated sync with My Ford Touch, including the 8-inch touchscreen. Get a sneak peek at the all-new 2012 Ford Focus by submitting a video between now and December 31st, 2010. If you're selected, Ford will donate $10,000 to a charitable cause of your choice. They're going to donate $500,000 in all, by the way. And send you and a friend on a free trip to Madrid. Want to go to Madrid?
Love to.
Can't win because you work here. But if you quit, please don't quit.
I won't.
But if you don't work here, you could go to Madrid and test drive the 2012 Ford Focus. You'll test drive it at Spain's National Institute for Aerospace Technology, where Spain's defense ministry tests space rockets.
Jeez Louise.
So $10,000 to a charity of your choice, chance to drive the 2012 Ford Focus, and play around near space rockets.
What's not to like?
Learn more and submit a video entry by going to twitfordfocus.com. It'll take you to the Facebook page where you can submit your video. Tell Ford what charitable cause you would like to support. Show it in your video. Keep it under 2 minutes. Upload your video by December 31st, and you could win. That's twitfordfocus.com. On to a lawsuit with Dunlap, Grubb, and Weaver. They're the folks who started up the U.S. Copyright Group. Mm. They've sued people behind 16,000 IP addresses for sharing indie films. They're the folks going after people who downloaded Far Cry.
Ah, the Uwe Boll masterpiece.
And there is a class action suit now being filed against them by Dmitry Shirakov.
So he was somebody that U.S. Copyright Group went after.
Exactly.
And he went, hold on a second.
He said, first of all,
I'm suing you.
When you registered the Far Cry copyright on behalf of the filmmaker Uwe Boll, you did it too late. Registrations have to be made within 90 days of publication. Far Cry appeared in the U.S. theaters in October 2008 and on DVD in April 2009, but you didn't register the copyright until January 2010, so your claim is invalid in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
You didn't do it within 90 days. And then, even if it was valid, if it was registered in January 2010, you're sending notices to people who downloaded it before January 2010, before you even registered it as a copyright.
So how can they possibly have a leg to stand on here? Their numbers don't add up.
At the most, they could get $27 per infringement back, because if you don't have it registered with the copyright organization in the U.S., you can only collect actual damages, not statutory damages.
So what some of these folks are claiming is, listen, you're just trying to get, you know, what happens is they go after somebody and say, well, you know, we're going to sue you for a lot of money. $1,500 to settle out of court, you know, and spare yourself the embarrassment. You get enough people giving you the money, then you make a lot of money.
Right. And so that opens them up to fraud charges. If they're telling people, hey, you might be liable for, you know, $1,500 per infringement. If it turns out that, no, you wouldn't, you'd only be liable for $27. Or if the claim isn't valid at all in the beginning, that's then they're breaking the law there.
Ouch.
96 pages of complaint. Has been filed, so we'll keep an eye on that. Vader.tv, Vader News, is spreading the rumor that everyone's picking up like wildfire that Google has bought Groupon. There's been lots of buzz that Google was interested in buying Groupon. Vader says, oh, no, we have a source that says Google bought Groupon for $2.5 billion.
They don't name the source, no, and they say neither company will confirm or deny. So, not, I don't know. I mean, you have to take that for what it is, but... Interesting, because it was the big rumor mill of last week, I guess.
Yeah, and everybody's now jumping in to say it would not make any sense for Google to buy Groupon. Groupon is a bunch of salespeople. They go out and they sell the deals that then they pass along to the coupon site. Google works on algorithms. Why would they ever buy Groupon?
Because Groupon does something well that Google doesn't. I mean, isn't that why companies acquire other companies? Because they want some of what that company does well.
But it does that well in a completely different vector than Google basically runs their business.
Yeah. I mean, Smucker's makes
jelly better than
Google.
It's almost like Google buying a McDonald's.
It wouldn't make, I mean, obviously that's way far afield. But I'm just saying, just because somebody does something better than Google doesn't mean it would fit in Google.
That's true. But that's also, I mean, it just because Google buys Groupon doesn't mean all of a sudden everything turns into some Google interface. I mean, some companies are acquired and run somewhat as if they always had in the past. $2.5 billion is lower than the $2 to $3 billion that supposedly Yahoo had offered Groupon, that Groupon turned down. So the number's lower than what people
maybe Google thinks they could bring some algorithm magic to Groupon, lower the cost of operations.
Well, I just, you know, I understand the argument that Google doesn't do this well. This just doesn't sound like an acquisition that makes sense for them because they don't do sales. But if they don't acquire a company like Groupon, do they have, you know, it's like, isn't that their best option rather than trying to do it internally themselves?
Well, if they don't do sales because they have a better way of doing it with the algorithm, then it doesn't make sense to buy a company that has a bunch of people who do it well the old way by face to face. But you're right. Maybe they're saying, hey, you know what? We need to take the advantage of both ways of doing it.
Well, I mean, this is totally out there, but there are a lot of check-in services that have deals with, you know, local businesses and restaurants for you check in, you get a discount. Google has their places and their whole Maps integration. Maybe they buy Groupon because those people already have relationships with the businesses.
If this is even true at all, which we don't know, I think you cracked it.
There you go.
Sweet. How are you guys having a good Cyber Monday?
I'm having a great Cyber Monday, Tom. Thanks for asking. I haven't bought anything, though.
Oh, really?
No, not a thing.
Because isn't Cyber Monday the biggest shopping day online of the year?
Actually, no. That's a fallacy.
No, it's absolutely true. It's not just marketing speak that was invented in 2005 to garner interest, or was it? Actually, that's what Snopes says.
Yeah.
Cyber Monday was developed in 2005.
It is a new term. I mean, remember when there was no Cyber Monday? I do. It wasn't that long ago.
Ah, those were the days.
Oh, the pre-Cyber Monday
when
years.
Monday was just Monday and there was no cyber to be.
Turns out that the biggest shopping day of the year is usually a Monday in December. And it moves around. But they try to hype up Cyber Monday, the idea being back in 2005 that folks didn't have high-speed internet at home or even internet at all. So when they went into work on Monday, they'd have high-speed internet. They'd check all these deal sites, and they would buy things online.
Now, is the Monday significant because maybe they had the weekend to think about it or to go and look in the stores and see what they wanted and then get the deal on Amazon?
And they didn't have the access at home. Turns out now, All Things D reports that the Thanksgiving Day is actually starting to catch up with Cyber Monday. Because Cyber Monday does have a lot of sales. Thanksgiving Day had a huge number of sales this year. Because people are like, hey, I'm going to check out deals before I go out shopping on Friday.
Well, and a variety of sites online had deals before today. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like,
absolutely.
They're all trying to scoop each other, too.
Right, yeah.
I mean, deal before the other deals.
I don't know about you guys, but it makes perfect sense to me. I mean, if I'm going to, you know, possibly get crushed, you know, in an elephant stampede to try to get in to, you know, Best Buy on Friday, on Black Friday, I would much rather buy when I want to buy on Cyber Thursday and save myself the trip.
Seriously.
And the trample.
And maybe avoid any Best Buys that have any sort of promotion that involve elephants. That's all.
Yeah. You're always good. Going a
always
little
wise.
Too far.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's a good year for the economy, finally, after a couple of bad Black Friday. Cyber shoppers collectively plunked down $648 million online on Friday. That's a gain of 9% over the same day last year. And Thanksgiving, as we mentioned, rose as well. A solid 28% rise in cyber sales on Thanksgiving. Overall, the online holiday shopping season has been off to a good start, according to ComScore. So it looks like people are in a spending mood this year, even online.
Good buying, all. Good buying.
The Federales are in a season mood. They rode up on 82 domains.
Oh, a season, not tis the season.
Right. Not
a seasoning.
Tis the season for season.
Tis the seizing time for the Department of Justice combined with the Department of Homeland Security. They sent the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to seize 82 domain names accused and determined by a magistrate to be engaging in illegal activities involving the sale of counterfeit products like bags, like Louis Vuitton purses, counterfeit DVDs, as well as torrentfinder.com, which is a search engine for torrent sites.
So Torrent Finder as a search engine would just allow you to search for actual torrent sites.
Yeah, what Torrent Finder does is it uses an iframe to bring up the pages of actual torrent listing sites. They don't actually list any torrents themselves, so they're a little upset because they didn't have a chance to defend themselves. They got no prior notice that this was going to happen if they didn't change their ways. ICE came in, seized their domain name, put up one of the little Federale logos, says these folks were engaged in illegal activity and now they're gone. Torrent Finder's like, wait a minute.
What'd we do?
We didn't host a single link to a torrent. All we did was bring up pages in an iframe for people. Is that illegal? Because if that's illegal, Google's well beyond the law.
Mm. So what does Torrent Finder have? You know, I mean, what leverage do they have at this point?
Well, if they've got enough money, they can appeal. They can go back to the court and they can try to fight it. But it's highly likely that they don't have that kind of money.
I mean, it's also likely that the folks who took them down didn't quite understand
iframes, right? Because
you know
it could look just like they were hosting the torrents. Although that itself is an interesting situation that probably should be determined in a jury trial, which is you know whether having links to torrents if you're not hosting the torrent trackers yourself is a violation.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these were non-controversial. Most of these were fairly obvious, and they were run by a judge, but not a trial. Let's thank our second sponsor that helps bring you tech news today, Slingbox. You can watch your TV anywhere with Slingbox. They just came out with an iPad app. So now all you do is you take the Slingbox, you buy it, you hook it up to your television, hook it up to your internet, and then you can watch all of your home television on your iPhone, on your iPod Touch, on your BlackBerry, on your laptop, your Windows laptop, your OS X laptop, and your iPad. It's everything that you get. No extra fees for the service. You pay only for the box or for the mobile devices. You pay for the apps. And then you can watch your television wherever you go in the world that has an internet connection. Check it out at a Best Buy near you or go to slingbox.com/twit. All your shows, your movie channels, your sports, your DVR, it's all available over the internet thanks to Slingbox. Check them out, slingbox.com/twit. Time for the news fuse. Iran's President Ahmadinejad said some of the centrifuges used in the country's uranium enrichment program were sabotaged, raising suspicions that they were affected by the Stuxnet computer worm. Ahmadinejad said the problems had been created by enemies of Iran, who succeeded in creating problems for a limited number of their centrifuges. But specialists have solved those problems, and they won't be experiencing them anymore.
You may soon be face chatting on Facebook.
Yeah,
or working on the Facebook application.
Spending some time on Facebook's chat.
Right.
Some FaceTime on Face. No, that's not going to work.
Something like that, but better, Jason. While working on his Facebook application, Tal Ater of Green Any Site noticed a little object in the Facebook code called video chat. What is this? I see. The object has several properties which refer to Skype and clearly suggest being able to video chat with Skype users. Otter, one of those is probably right.
Tal.
Facebook.
Just call him Tal.
Hey, Tal. How's it going? Tal claims Facebook is bucket testing the functionality, and I, for one, am thrilled.
You want to do video chats over Facebook? With you?
I'd like the option.
I guess I wouldn't mind my Facebook.
I'd like to check it out.
Contacts being integrated somehow, yeah. Maybe. As long as I have control over it.
I don't think you'll be forced to video chat. Well.
You say that.
I'll eat my word.
The U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear the case of a file swapper who claimed she was an innocent infringer. Whitney Harper thought P2P was like internet radio, and she stopped infringing as soon as she learned otherwise. However, a lower court decision now stands that since CD jackets have copyright notices on them, Harper should have known better. And so she is liable for the infringement. Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito, of all people, dissented from the decision. He said that they should have taken the case and that the law, which was written in 1988, is severely out of date for the internet age.
That was a long time ago for the internet age, anyway.
I graduated high school then.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, get out your magnifying glasses because it's up to you to tell the difference between real diamonds and zirconia now. The Supremes also declined to hear an appeal from Tiffany & Company. You've heard of them. They make nice diamond rings. Who hope to get the court to make eBay responsible for knockoffs sold on the auction site. A lower court ruling now stands, which found that eBay responds adequately to notices of counterfeiting, and further action is the responsibility of Tiffany.
Mm-hmm.
You.
Not eBay. Comcast subscribers up and down the East Coast lost internet access yesterday, November 28th, due to a malfunction in Comcast's DNS handling. While the company said access was restored, there were still a handful of users reporting issues early this morning. During the outage, some users discovered that if they used a third-party DNS provider like OpenDNS, boom, internet access was back.
2011 should be a bumper year for 3D TVs and tablets, according to analysts. Gartner cut its forecast for global PC shipments in 2011, largely due to growing popularity of tablets. Huh, who knew? Meanwhile, Futuresource Consulting predicts sales of 4 million 3D TVs in 2010 and 8 million selling in 2011. They note that one-year adoption of 3D TV is running at a far quicker rate than it did for high def.
A Danish magazine about Android had their app rejected from the Apple App Store because it was about Android. The publisher, that's what the publisher claims, said the subject matter was given as the reason for the rejection. That would make Android Magasinet the first of a possible trend of controversies around publications' subject matter as Apple pushes the iPad as a magazine and newspaper platform. No word from Apple officially why the app was rejected.
Maybe it just didn't fit other specifications.
Maybe it was buggy.
Maybe Steve Jobs just said,
you know, it's buggy.
I don't like it.
It's about Android.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't get anything Android anywhere else.
Yeah.
You're out of here. iPhone dev team and Team Tweezers hackers Bushing and Pytay have launched a Kickstarter fundraiser to back OpenVizsla, an open hackable hardware-based USB protocol analyzer. The work would continue to enable free open drivers for everything USB, like Kinect, iPhone, etc., and allow indie software developers to continue making tools that interact with our hardware. Kickstarter has all sorts of stuff right now.
I said this on iPad Today this week. I'm going to just start working for Kickstarter. You pay me, I'll do things.
Right. And if our salaries are high enough,
then we'll do things.
We'll keep making shows. And everybody
don't
wins.
Let Leo hear that idea. He'll be like, great, that's what we're going to do.
He already does that, actually.
So. I know, exactly. Worried about whether the oft-rumored and sometimes obfuscated by Eric Schmidt Nexus S is ever going to come out? Well, worry less. The so-called GTI 9020T, which we all know as the Nexus S, has now turned up yet again at the FCC with a pair of new Bluetooth Wi-Fi and GPS antennas. And Gadget points out that doesn't mean there won't be any more changes, but it does indicate that the GTI 9020T model will actually be released. And two Kinects have joined forces to create better 3D video, thanks to us, right?
Well, because we showed one Kinect doing mediocre 3D video, and we said...
We showed this guy who had figured out how to make one Kinect do 3D video.
Which was cool, but we said, imagine if he had two cameras.
Exactly.
Wow. And then he obviously listened to the show.
Yeah, he pulled out a notepad and scribbled that down.
Sarah Lane is a genius.
I have a feeling he might have thought of it on his own.
Yeah, he probably did.
Just like we did. But anyway, he has plugged in two Kinects. And figured out the IR patterns and paired the output, meshed it together. And so now he has like a real honest to goodness 3D look at how the Kinect box sits on a table. But, you know, he can totally, he has a better view of it. He's got at least three sides instead of one side. Remember in the first one, you know, when you went around to another side of him,
he was
just kind of 2D in a 3D world. Here, you can't see the back of the box. But you can see three of the sides because you got two cameras. So I guess the next thing is
let's just go ahead and throw out the idea there. You know what this guy should do?
Third camera.
He should have like a third and fourth camera or something. I'm just throwing that out there.
I love how it looks like it's just like a little scooped out thing because he doesn't have a camera in the back. It's really cool.
Yeah. It's really getting better. And the artifacts are less. They're still there, but they're less now that he's got two cameras. This stuff is getting cooler and cooler.
Now they just need to higher res it. You know what I mean? Because everything, even when it's coming through, still kind of looks
heavy.
Yeah,
well, I mean, it makes sense. You start by figuring out how to just make it work, and then you start to try to
working on lighting and that sort of stuff.
This episode of Tech News Today is also brought to you by the AARP Auto Insurance Program from The Hartford. For our audience members over the age of 50, the AARP Auto Insurance Program from The Hartford can save you $384 on auto insurance. More than 3 million AARP members who are already enjoying the benefits of this program enjoy it, including lifetime renewability, a lifetime repair guarantee, and a six-point claim guarantee. Customers describe the claims experience as fast, easy, and outstanding. Check them out today. Get an eight-minute quote. Go to aarp.thehartford.com/podcast. That's aarp.thehartford.com/podcast.
Should we move on to the calendar?
Let's do it.
So, you know, back in 2009 when Nokia sued Apple saying that it had infringed on some Nokia patents, well, they're finally going to court this week. The patent wars between Apple and Nokia begin. Lawyer up, man. Also in the news, Sprint and Clearwire deliver WiMAX to Los Angeles, Ohio, the whole state, Miami, and Washington, D.C., and they're promising San Francisco on December 28th.
Wait a minute. Why do we have to wait till December 28th?
I don't know.
Also, it's Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus.
Okay.
Although that's a lot more of Ohio than California gets.
Yeah.
Just Los Angeles.
Sorry for all the people, you know, in Akron.
And Zanesville.
I said it covered. Yeah. Who aren't actually covered.
And we have some ways to participate in Tech News Today now for the holiday season.
Oh,
right?
What great news.
Oh, why? I know a little bit about that.
Well, I'd love to hear more.
bit.ly/, what is it, TNT Holiday 2010. There you go. You can submit moments for the best of episode. You can dance like a fool in a chair. We actually got a submission over the weekend. And the guy at the very end of it was like, I couldn't help but feel like this is one of those sounded like a good idea at the time sort of things.
Yeah, I feel that way every day.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. In about 10 minutes when we play the outro music. And then the third way would be the open mic where you can be a part of a TNT episode. So all those details can be found at the bit.ly/TNT Holiday 2010 URL.
We really need the best of stuff. That's the thing we need the most. So if you can only pick one of the three, pick that one. On to the emails to TNT@twit.tv. You want to start us off, Sarah?
Yeah. First email from Chris Sellers in Jonesboro, Arkansas. I was watching the podcast the other day when you talked about the Acer tablet that has two touch screens. I haven't heard any specs, but I'd assume that you'd be able to connect a hardware keyboard and mouse via USB and or Bluetooth. What would be really cool is if they created a keyboard you could quickly snap on over the lower touch screen, maybe by plugging in a USB port that was located on the side of the unit that would allow you to easily type lengthy documents. Just a thought. Love the show.
You know what would be great about that two touch screen laptop that doesn't have a keyboard? adding a keyboard.
And lose one of them screens.
Yeah. I think he still wants the two screens. He's just greedy. Oh. He's like, put a keyboard on it, too. That's pretty funny. Chris.
He wants it to snap on over the lower touchscreen. Maybe it's sort of like on the side of it.
It's an option.
That doesn't make any sense then.
Well, maybe it's hanging off of the entire...
Yeah, that makes
Let's sense. Make the unit bigger
yeah.
and more functional.
Let's redesign it.
I've got an idea. Let's build it with a hardware keyboard on the bottom instead of a touchscreen.
You know, that's what's wrong with tablets these days. No keyboard.
Yeah.
Right.
Add a keyboard, now you got something.
Exactly.
Maybe have it flip closed.
Right, so you could just
take it with you.
I'm loving
Wi-Fi.
This. You know, actually, if you separate the two, the keyboard from the screen, then you could have more flexibility. You could put it on a desk.
You know, I've got this
desk. Top of a desk.
I've got this desk at home. I got nothing on it.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Let's
and it would
that.
Just stay there.
Finally, Theo wrote in and said, a bit of Twitter serendipity, 15 minutes of fame. For a poor lady who had the Ashes as her Twitter handle. Her name is Ashley, and apparently her boyfriend at some point started referring to her as the Ashes. Well, at the same time, the famous The Ashes cricket match is happening between Australia and England. So her follower count skyrocketed to some 6,000 followers, all of whom were twittering to her about the cricket match until finally she was so frustrated she wrote in all caps, I am not a freaking cricket match.
This is great. If you go to her Twitter page now in the bio, it says, if you're going to harass me about crickets, at least buy a t-shirt.
And then she started a t-shirt shop with a t-shirt that says, I am not a freaking cricket match.
Well, poor Ashley. I mean, just goes to show a lot of people are not reading Twitter bios very carefully.
Someone pointed out that the Ashes is not a match. It's a series. Okay, fine. That's the point of this story.
It's not Ashley.
The Ashes.
That's what it really is.
Actually isn't the Ashes. It's a woman named Ashley. So let it go.
Poor Ashley. I hope you sell some t-shirts for your pain and suffering.
Yeah, me too.
Well, you know, the Ashes started because England did so poorly against Australia that they said they carried the ashes of English cricket back to the country afterwards because they were burned by Australia. That's how it got started. And now there actually are ashes in a little...
Sounds like just container. An emotional type of game all around.
They got
fire
kicking,
and brimstone.
As you might say.
Mm.
Anyway, poor Ashley. But at least she's famous on Twitter now for a small period of time. Thanks for sending that along, Theo. Also, he points out Qantas has offered her a free flight to Australia to enjoy the series, as you point
really?
Out.
Really?
Yeah.
Qantas, nice airline. I wonder if she'll want to go, though.
I like the socks. They give you socks.
They do. Yeah. They give you socks and toothpaste. It's a long flight, at least from California.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching and listening. However you consume it, go to twit.tv/TNT to look at the wiki, which has all our show notes. You can visit us and email us. TNT@twit.tv is our email address. And give us a call. Phone us. 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you tomorrow.